the Touching the Trail podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 129 of the Touching the Trail podcast with this week's guest, Tyler Tomasello. Now, before we jump into it all, I just want to remind you all how you can support this show. You can go to touchingthetrail.com/donate and donate to the show. You can do however much you want, but it will all be greatly appreciated. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak. Functional, affordable, unique, and handmade recovery tools that target and dig deep into any muscle. And both those links are in the show notes. Now, Tyler is a photojournalist, a storyteller, a runner, an all-around interesting dude. I met him at the Born to Run Ultramarathons, and we reconnected a few weeks later to do the episode. We did it on Skype, so please excuse any sound troubles, sound mess-ups, anything like that. I hope it sounds good, and I hope the message comes across. And so without further ado, please enjoy my episode with Tyler Tomasello. Thank you.
You said you might be in a tent tonight, so are you going to be?
I was supposed to. Most summers I actually spend the summer in my tent. Where I live is surrounded by 1,000 acres of national forest, so I usually take time every summer to kind of go out there and just try to sleep out there and just kind of be one with nature and just enjoy my time, you know. Mm-hmm. Life can get kind of crazy sometimes.
Yeah. My first thing that I wanted to kind of explore, and it's something that I think features prominently in your life from what I've seen, is your vagabond type lifestyle. And so how does that kind of impact your mental headspace, you know, moving around so constantly?
I wouldn't call it constantly. I do it as much as I can. For me, it's, I just really love always doing something new and seeing new places, and really the whole point of that is to meet new people. So all these new places I go, I have the opportunity to meet some of the most amazing, inspiring people. So I don't want to say I get bored easily when I'm in a place, but it's nice to experience new things and get out and about every now and then. But as far as mental headspace goes, I don't really notice it as much. I feel like I'm always learning new things, and that's what motivates me and drives me so much.
So you do, you're in Winter Park for a lot of the year, and then you're traveling when you can?
Exactly, yeah. I'm in Winter Park, off and on for most of the year. But when I can get out, I can. I do the best I can. I spend a lot of time in Las Vegas, and because my girlfriend lives there, and then also try to get out of the country as much as humanly possible.
So, something that I think we should probably jump to talking about, you know, is in Winter Park you run this race, the Hideaway Trail Run. So talk to me a little bit about how that kind of evolved and how you, I assume, you know, your home trails, and you turn that into a race that people come to and want to run.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I started the race 4 years ago now, almost. And I started it because it's a very seasonal place here in Winter Park. So, there's winter, and then there's mud season, which is the time between winter and summer where nobody's here and the snow's melting. And then between summer and winter is another mud season, and it's just kind of rainy and the snow's coming. So I wanted to put together some kind of option for people to come up here and give them a reason. And really the whole point of that was to kind of stimulate the economy of that community, but also let my community see what I'm so passionate about. And then my friends in the running community get to see what I'm passionate about and how I live in, which are the trails and the mountains, and this place is home to me. And I feel more at home on the trail and in the forest than I do really anywhere else. So that was really my whole motivating drive behind doing it.
And I've never been out to Winter Park. I've never been out to those trails I've only been out to Colorado one time, really. And so I'm curious, you know, like you go about creating this race, and it is on your home trails and you want to share those trails with it. And so how do you kind of, I guess, what drew you, I guess, in the first place, I guess, would be a good question, to those trails and to that area to tell that story and be willing to have that race there?
Yeah, I mean, I moved here when I was 19, pursued snowboarding, and I did that for a while, and then just got kind of old, you know. But still wanted to be outside and do athletic stuff, so I got into trail running, which all started down in Mexico at the Copper Canyon Race. And I saw what that race was all about, and it was all about community and things like that. So just being up here and having the opportunity, I mean, you have hundreds of miles of trails around here that are all public and they all connect with each other pretty much. So I feel like I'm the luckiest man in the world. So for me, being able to share that with everyone was almost an honor to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it just kind of evolved into what it is now. Kind of starting to become its own like living organism in a way, you know? All I have to do is mark the trail, invite people to come. And next thing you know, it's fun sitting back after, you know, all the stress of race directing and everything like that. I can stop and then just kind of look around and just see people from different parts of my life and different travels and different states and even countries come together, and they're just all celebrating and just having a good time. Because what I've tried to design as a race, it has nothing to do with the actual race itself. Because as a race director, I always tell all the runners, I'm like, you know, I don't care how fast you run. I don't care if you break course records or anything, because that's not what it's about for me, and that's not what running is about for me. It's just about, you know, being out, doing something you love with the people you love. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, like, we see that word thrown around a lot, I think, in social media and in culture today, community and family, and those two words. And I think it in running, you know, in ultra running, the reason for me that I've seen why community is so strong is because, you know, you're running these distances and you're suffering, you're in discomfort. And I think that really tears back all of the layers and kind of creates an honest and kind of blank canvas to connect with people. And then you see that really strong and connected community build from that.
Absolutely. And you can be rich or poor, or have a job or no job, or homeless, or have a $1 million house. It doesn't matter. Like, everybody's connected in the suffering in that way, yeah.
Right. So how do you build community? You know, how do you go about working to bring those people there and to create those connections, not just at a race necessarily, but in your life? As you go through your travels?
I don't think it's a conscious thought, really, of like building community or making friends or friendships and family or anything like that. I think it's more of my own curiosity. You know, I try to go into any travel or anywhere I go in the world, or race, for example, and just try to go into it with an open mind and an open heart and smile as much as you can and try to have as much fun as you can. And then for some reason, these relationships evolve. And I don't know how it works or like how to even really explain it. I just know that for some reason, these people, like I just got back from Afghanistan, and I know the people there could meet my friends here that are runners, and they would connect and bond. And, you know, because for some reason, these amazing people just keep coming into my life. And I just feel so honored for that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think it... prime example of an event that displays community is where I met you a few weekends ago at the Born to Run Ultras. And so kind of tell me about your experience with that event and kind of why you return there year after year, because I've known you, I know you've gone a lot.
Yeah, I've gone, I can't even tell you how many years now. Some of them are boys and some of them are clear, but yeah, I go year after year. I met Lewis down in Copper Canyon. I can't even tell you what year. And he was kind of telling me about the race, and I should go, and it sounded like a great time. So I just showed up one year and ran my first 100-miler, actually, on the ranch there. And it was just so cool being able to, you know, run laps around this ranch, and then every 10 miles you come through the main aid station there and see all your friends and having a great time and dancing and sitting around the fire back then. And there's something so special about that. And just you know, every time you come through, everybody's screaming, they run over, and you have, like, the biggest crew you could ever imagine for another miler, you know? And there's something so special about that, and that's, like, that community that we're talking about. I don't know if Lewis consciously put it together as a community race, but it turned into one of the biggest running communities I've ever had in my life. Every time I go, I make new friends, and it keeps me coming back year after year.
Yeah, that was my first weekend there at the event, and I didn't really know what to expect, and I also did know what to expect. I've kind of been on the periphery of that whole crowd for a while now, and I know a bunch of different people in that scene, I guess you could say, and I've heard a lot about it and seen a lot about it, but actually being there for the weekend, it exceeded all of my expectations and was way more than I expected, and I really was fascinated by how quickly everybody seemed to come from all these, you know, disparate backgrounds and walks of life, and they all come and they're pretty much all the same in a good way. You know, they're all connected through this run and through this love for running. That's really what most impressed me my first time there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just a really beautiful celebration.
Yeah. Right. So, I think running, we look at it as something that's very personal and very intimate with ourselves, and it is, you know, I completely agree. And so in my preparation for today's conversation, I was reading somewhere that you had a very rough upbringing, a very rough childhood, and so do you think that influences your decisions and, like, love of running, and then subsequently your love of the community that builds around that?
I wouldn't say I had, like, a rough upbringing. I was very happy and had, like, a loving family and siblings. My mother was an amazing, hardworking single mother, so there's nothing I do more than look up to, like, that gift to have somebody like that in my life. And really, everything I try to do is to make her proud nowadays. When I was younger, though, like, in my teens and 20s, I was crazy party kid and liked to have a really good time and really was a self-destructive kind of person.
I guess that's what I read about. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So nowadays, back then I was just out to just have a good time. And, like, I remember when I was in high school, my guidance counselor asked me what I wanted to do when I got older, what I liked to do in the moment. And I was sat there for a minute and I was thinking about it. And I just remember all I would really do is, you know, party and have to do drugs and things like that back then. So, like, I didn't really have a passion for something I loved, like, to give my life for, you know? So nowadays I try to almost reflect who my mother was, or is still, I guess. And that's how I try to lead my life. So in running and things like that, like you call it a personal thing, and it used to be that for me. I had several injuries, in the past that kind of kept me from racing and running. So nowadays I'm trying to look more toward helping people through running and doing my part. As far as, like, inspiring and, like, being in Afghanistan, for example, I'm sure we'll get to that. But, I just feel like running is so much more than just racing, you know. And that's kind of what I'm trying to focus on now. And just try to give back to the community that's given me so much.
I think it's really something that you have to fall in love with the process with, and something that is, I think if we let ourselves get too focused on, you know, the times and numbers and the paces, and then if you're, have some semblance of a good athlete in you and the sponsors and such, then I think it can really get away from us and we lose that love and we lose that passion. And so for me, you know, personally, I just, in my own running career and life, I've seen that you need to take some time every year if you feel yourself slipping away to stop and take a step back and find that love again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why I haven't raced in so long, is because I did lose that. And, you know, I put so much pressure on myself with the running and, like, knowing I had this injury that wouldn't go away, and I just kept pushing and pushing. I want to make my sponsors proud. I want to make this person proud. And really at the end of the day, I realize that, you know, they don't really care. They're just happy you're out there sharing and being passionate about what you do.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I really have, like, seen a lot of people around me become super focused on that and then lose that love, and then they don't take the time to take a step back, and then they blow up and leave the sport altogether, or leave whatever sport it may be. It's not just, this isn't unique to running, you know, this whole thing of becoming too focused on the external aspects of it all, the negative external aspects. And I think if we can take a second to, or more than a second, you know, to just take that step, it's smart in the long run. And you're talking about injury, you know, and I think if you do find that love again, I have found that the injuries and just the unhappiness with whatever, like, running situation I'm in usually go away, and it becomes much more simple and straightforward.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious, you know, to me it seems like emotion is a very, I think, a common theme in what you share and what you do. So first, I'm curious, how does running help you to process emotion? And then kind of going off of that, I think there's two sides of the emotion, using that word in your life, is running, of course, is a tool to process emotion. And then you also, as a storyteller, capture emotions in others. And so how do you balance both and do both effectively?
As far as running goes, I think it's a great way just to, you know, if you're having a bad day, you know, it's the simple things that you hear and think about. You have a bad day at work, bad day at school, whatever it may be, and you get out on a trail, you kind of, you don't forget about it, but you have time to really process everything and think about it. Like me running in Afghanistan by myself one day, I just started bawling up. I was thinking about going around with my friends, things like that, and it was probably a lot of, you know, other stresses happening around while I was there, but it's a time to let it out, be with yourself, and connect with yourself. And of course, being outside, of course, and being in nature is a huge, like, therapy for most people. So in that way, it's so good for me. Like I said, without racing anymore, it's so much easier to be more in touch with myself, because I'm not staring at my Garmin all the time. Now I just use a broken kind of Timex timer that works every now and then. And if it doesn't work, whatever, you know, I got what I needed. So it's more time to be in touch with me. And then as far as being a storyteller, in a photojournalist, and a lot of times in journalism, they tell you not to just look at what you're doing and then report on that, rather than getting involved. But in my own style of doing it, I like to get involved. I like to feel what the people are feeling. And in that way, because I understand how they're feeling in a way, it might be a fraction of what they're feeling, I can tell a more honest story and more realistic story. And then hopefully in my writing, whoever's reading it can also see that feeling as well. So I think full circle, emotion is very important in everyone's life. I think blocking it out, not being in touch with it is a very dangerous thing.
Yeah, I'm actually a journalism major here at school, and that is most definitely a very common edict that everybody tells you to follow, is to be objective, you know. And I agree that in my own writing and what I've done, I think that it is important to include that honesty from both sides, and what your experience was of it and what their experience was of the situation. And I think, like you were saying, it can create a more cohesive and well-rounded story.
Absolutely.
So one thing, you know, in your storytelling, I think what you really focus on is photography. So why does photography speak to you in the way it does, so much so that, you know, you focus on it so much and have that love for it?
Well, when I was really, I guess I've always loved photography. My mom kind of got me into it. She gave me my first camera. Years ago, maybe a little less, but I started taking pictures with my friends and skateboarding and things I love to do. And just looking back on these moments and these memories were really the cool thing for me. And then when I got into running and started having some success with it, I obviously started using social media. And then I would take these, like almost like a running selfie kind of thing that I felt, and I would always attach a little story to it about what I was feeling in the moment. And I felt like, in a way, that it was an opportunity for me to help inspire people to get out and enjoy the run and not think about times and things like that. But once I kind of fell out of the sport, as far as competition goes, I bought a camera and got in Nicaragua. Actually, I was going down there to run Fuegoleagua 100K, I think. And I was just walking around with my camera, hanging out with Pat and Sweeney. Then Luis Escobar was down there, and Jeffrey Genova, and then guys that I look up to, who's a really good friend of mine. And they kind of just helped me out, pointing me in the right direction. And then it just kind of took off from there. I just noticed that running wasn't happening for me anymore as far as the racing side goes. So I just started following that. I'm just telling people stories. I'm traveling around the world doing that. And now I'm so passionate about it because I feel like, in a way, you're not changing anything. Like, one photo is not going to change the world. But in a way, if you can walk up to somebody and say, hey, is it cool if I take your photo? And you see, like, this smile on their face in this really negative environment. I feel like, in a way, for a split second, you're changing a person's lives or changing that moment, which, and some kind of roundabout crazy way can almost change the world, you know? So that's kind of how I've fallen in love with that, telling stories through that. So.
Well, I think it's almost like you're giving that person, you're telling them that they exist, you know, you're acknowledging them and you're calling them out enough to say that they're important enough in your mind that you want to document them and take a picture of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, all journalists and photographers want to be a megaphone for the people who don't necessarily have a voice in the world. So I think that's a lot of the motivation behind me, you know, traveling to these places and doing these things.
Mm-hmm. And how does being behind the camera and the one telling the story influence and shape your experience of what's going on in front of the lens?
I think, I was on the last trip I was on, I was there for a month, and I took probably about 1,000 photos, which in reality I probably could have taken 50,000 photos, because I wanted to be a part of it as well. You know, I wanted to enjoy it and experience it and not just be the guy behind the camera. Because when I first started doing this, I found myself not necessarily missing the moment, but I always feel like I'm watching it. And I like enjoying it just as much as I like having some kind of tangible proof of that moment, you know. Because sometimes when you're sitting there thinking about things and looking at a picture, you can't feel it as much as when you think about it in your mind as memory, you know.
Right, and yeah, that's like, I was taking pictures at Born to Run, and because I was there writing a piece as well for a magazine, and so I was trying to balance, like you were saying, between like taking shots of the events going on and things happening, and also just being there and being present. And I was thinking, you know, about why I was like balancing that, those two sides of the equation, that I think there is a way to have the camera and still be present, but I think to reach that state, it's a hard thing to reach and something that takes practice, and I don't think I'm there yet.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm not going to say I'm great at it either. I don't think it's just always having it with you. Always ready to, see the moment and capture it, but also capture it with your heart more than anything else.
Right. So you've mentioned it a bunch of times now, and so tell me about your Afghanistan trip and what that experience was like and how it came about.
Yeah. It was kind of a crazy journey on how it started and how it ended up. I saw a piece about the Bamiyan Ultra Marathon, or the Afghanistan Ultra, or Afghanistan Marathon, excuse me. And it was this group of girls who went out and ran this race. This organization put it together, put the team together so the girls would be able to go out and run it. I was super inspired by it. So I was like, all right, let's see what happens if I send them an email. And so I just sent them an email asking if I could come out and do a story. And they were super receptive. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I like to be involved while I'm there. So I tried to throw out that I would love to volunteer and help out while I'm there as well. So next thing I know, long story short, they said you're more than welcome to come out, and they helped me find a place to stay and set me up with everything I needed to make it a successful trip. And obviously when you buy a ticket to go to Cabo, you get a little nervous and a little, you know, on edge about everything. I just ended up there and just kind of went with the flow of everything. And stayed at the house. And I was doing a story for Old Spring Magazine while I was there. And it's crazy how I was focused on the story when I got there. But as the time went on, I formed this bond with this group of women that, you know, faced so much hardship and like, tough times just to be able to go out and do something that we, you know, I don't want to say we take it for granted because I know we all appreciate it, but the simplest thing for them is one of the hardest things to do. So I just felt honored to be in their presence, and they were so kind, and you know, they supplied me security, they supplied me food, they gave me a place to stay, and it was just amazing how easy it was just to kind of fall into their lifestyle. And living with the Afghans was pretty cool. I mean, just being a part of that daily life and trying to get out as much as I can, and just go to the schools, and a lot of the girls that are on the team that are preparing for these races are also teaching lifestyle skills classes at a lot of the local schools and things. So I was able to go to these places and just see how the normal life was for everyone. And then just becoming a part of their community and a part of their family was really, really special.
Yeah, I think, you know, it being such a culture that is steeped in many preconceptions and misconceptions in America, I think it's, I'm curious, like, you know, going there before you went, what were you thinking this trip was going to be like? And after you went, how does that compare and contrast to what it ended up being once you got home?
Yeah, I'm a terrible traveler as far as planning goes. So I made a point not to do any research on Afghanistan or anything like any of the girls or any of the political problems or the conflict going on there at the time. And for that reason, I went into it as open-minded as I possibly could. When I got there, obviously, when you fly into Kabul, you're flying past military aircraft, Humvees, tons of barbed wire, you know, guys just hanging out that are in the military with machine guns. And obviously, if you've never been to a situation like that, it can definitely get you a little nervous. So when I went there, I was a little sketched out. But I met Taylor, the country director for 3GM. She helped me out from the airport. And then we started driving to the city. Just a crazy little town, Kabul is. So obviously, when I got there, I was very nervous. But over the time I was there, I fell in love with the city. I fell in love with the country, the people. I was nothing more than welcomed in everyone's homes, their businesses, everything. And honestly, leaving there, I really was pretty sad because I fell in love with the place so much that I can't wait to go back and see all my friends. And I know when I go back that I'll have a place to stay, I'll have a ride, I'll have as much tea as I can drink. You know, it's a very welcoming society, and I think that's tough for me being home. Is like a lot of the questions you get are the misconceptions that you hear in the media and things. It's a very dangerous place and definitely a security issue, but at the same time, it's also one of the most welcoming places I've ever been to in my entire life, and also one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. So it was definitely a 180 from what I was doing when I got there.
And, you know, you went there to tell a story about running and to tell a story about these women running. And so how did running play into your kind of day-to-day life there in Afghanistan, in Kabul, and the experience? How did that? How did when it, running? I from you know an outside perspective looking in, I kind of can see that maybe running was a lens for you to experience Kabul and the culture there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, women's rights in Afghanistan are very like critical subject, which is probably hard to get into right now. But so for the women there, or the girls that I was running with, they were have issues. It's hard for them to go out and just run on their own. So Free to Run got together and gave them the opportunity to go to these places and safe places to run. My first run there, I got picked up in a van at 5 o'clock in the morning, maybe 4:30. We jump in, drive probably a half an hour through the streets of Kabul, past all these military checkpoints and everything. We go through all these gates, security gates, just to get behind these blast walls and barbed wire fences in this little town. And we ran up a 0.8 mile road for about an hour and a half, and that's where they train, you know. That's all they have, really. There's a few places where they're allowed to run and that are safe, where they don't get screwed with. And every single day I run with them. After a week, the country director, Taylor, left to go do some work in Iraq. So while I was there, I had the opportunity to pretty much coach and train the team. So I was using what knowledge I gained in ultra running and share it with them. But over time, I realized, like, yeah, we can do, you know, hill sprints and strides all we want, but I wanted them to focus on just being mindful of the fact that we were just running in a beautiful place with really beautiful people and just have fun and laugh as much as we can. So really my goal was to have as much fun as I could with the girls and show them that running isn't always about the race. You know, they're preparing for a really tough race, you know, at the Gobi March. It was amazing how running bridged that gap to me, and it's bridged many gaps in my life. I'm very thankful that I was able to use what I had learned in the past and share it with the girls and create these relationships with them.
Was there a language barrier for when you were there?
Not really. I mean, it's a very well-educated society, you know, as far as language goes. So everybody spoke a little bit of English, way better than I spoke Dari. So just being able to like, walk around and talk to people, and with the girls themselves, they all spoke very great English, probably better than I do. So I was blessed to have such a great group of people around me at all times.
And what was the storytelling aspect of this trip like? You know, how did you... I don't want to say dry out, but, you know, how did you sit and share and engage with the stories I'm sure people told you and the stories you collected? How did you kind of process and work with those and be with them?
When I saw you at Born to Run, I got off the plane on Thursday and went straight to Born to Run. So I think now that I'm back in Colorado, I'm finally, like, processing those stories. I haven't written the article yet. I'm actually just starting on it. So it's pretty cool to sit down right now and look at those and think about the people. And for me, when I'm talking to people about their story, I don't want to be the journalist guy interviewing them. You know, I want to be their friend talking to them about their lives and what they did. You know, I talk about my life and how I grew up. And then, you know, back to the whole connection and community thing. You know, and then we're helping each other in a way. I often tell people now that I'm home that I learned more from them than I could ever teach them or coach them. So, storytelling is interesting in that regard, you know.
Right, yeah. I've never done anything international trip-wise or storytelling wise. And so, but through this podcast, you know, and through the internet, I guess you can say, I've had the opportunity to chat with people from all over the world. And I think it's something that, you know, we can have these conceptions about what other cultures are like and what, even other people are like, you know, even your next door neighbor, you, can easily know nothing about them. And so that's why I like to sit down and chat with people for an extended amount of time, because you can't just draw out life stories and observations and interesting thoughts in a 5-minute conversation. You know, I think it's important to stop and take a breath and be present with whoever you're chatting with, so that you can really engage with what they're telling you, because they're opening themselves up to you, and I think it's important to do the same with them.
Absolutely. I mean, after all, everyone in the world is more alike than they are different. Everyone has a story. Everybody's been through something or done something that's affected the way they are now,
Right.
And I think just being, like I say, just being humble and being open-minded and having an open heart really goes a long way.
Right. And so, now, like you said earlier, you got into trail running. Part of the catalyst for that was your trip to the Copper Canyons in Mexico. You just were in Afghanistan. So how is interacting with these different cultures across the world that you've interacted with and more that you may have not even mentioned and that I'm not aware of, how has that those interactions shaped you as a person today?
That's a good question. I guess, like I said, I try to learn something everywhere I go and be humble. And I feel more comfortable in those places. And I find comfort in uncomfortable situations. And I think, like ultra running, it strips you down to the bare necessity and the bare who you really are. And then I think I carry that into a normal life. So for me, it's really hard. Like coming home, going to Born to Run, it's pretty tough just to kind of I can see this, 2 example, a girl in short shorts and a tank top doing cartwheels. Like, that's was extreme for me, at that moment in time, even though it was 1 month I was gone. I just try to, just try to share the stories I learned, try to share everything I know, but also be open to learning new things. And I feel like it's really special because you meet some of the most amazing people just by doing that in normal life. And I'll be walking downtown Denver, sit down with a homeless guy, and just learn his story and, buy him some coffee, just chill out, because there's really no difference between me and him other than the fact that he might have had a hard experience that put him in the situation he's in now. So it's cool because I really get to meet what makes our country great, but really what makes the world a really beautiful place.
How do you think we can stay open to those new perspectives and to learning those new things? When, as humans, we can very easily reach to shut our doors and to not be willing to new opinions and new perspectives.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a personal thing and who you are as a person, but really just being open and being humble. And being humble is really hard for a lot of people. And it's been hard for me in the past, but through the experiences I've had, it gets easier and easier every day. I think that's the number one way to do it.
So kind of shifting gears here and kind of related, like we were talking about earlier, to travel and moving around, how you were saying you split your year, between travel and Winter Park. How do you, you're going on these, moving from place to place and even more generally in day to day, how do you keep your body healthy when you're on the go and also when you're at home in Winter Park?
Just trying to be as active as possible, eating good. As good as you can, wherever you are in the world. First thing I did when I got back to Winter Park, I grabbed my skateboard and went to the skate park and just, pumped around the pools a little bit. And just getting out really is the best way to do it. And when you travel, you don't realize how much you're doing, actually, to stay fit. Many times you get off the plane and you have to walk, 5 kilometers to catch the taxi, which drops you off. 4K from your hotel, things like that.
Right.
So it's just a matter of just getting out, and if you get your pack on your back and you're walking and you're doing something, and it'll pay off for sure.
And you're vegan, aren't you? I think I read that somewhere.
I was vegan for a long time, but obviously the more I travel, the more I realize that when there's food in front of you, it's hard to say no to, you know, and that's going back to being humble again, you know. It's hard when you see people that are maybe less fortunate or not having the food that you may have, and the option to, you know, go buy some tempeh and all these nice vegetables and make a nice meal. So nowadays, it's like, in Afghanistan or Mexico or something, if someone kills a goat and gives you a big chunk of goat, you're going to eat it, you know, because you're hungry. So, I mean, nowadays, I'm less focused on the vegan side of things and more focused on just being happy to and appreciative of having food.
Yeah. Yeah, I think these, like, super, you can say, like, I think the way you approach food and what we eat and what we intake can be very elitist and very first world. You know, you can say that I'm going to eat this or this or this and only going to buy superfoods from Whole Foods and only going to spend this amount of money on blah, blah, blah. But whether it's veganism or whether it's some, I'm vegan, so that's why I asked, but whether it's some other, you know, way of eating that you're going to choose, I think the best approach is really just to keep it simple and keep it true to the earth. And I think when we overcomplicate things and start focusing on the extraneous stuff, like what we can get from Whole Foods or what we can post on Instagram, that's when the problem comes in, deeper than even necessarily what you do and don't eat. I think it's the way we approach the whole aspect of it all.
I mean, even when I was vegan, there's no right way or wrong way to eat. It's just what works best for my body, you know.
Right.
But nowadays, it's just calories are calories, and if you're doing something with those calories, then, you know, you can throw plastic in a fire and it's going to burn. It might not be good for the environment, but it's going to burn. So that's kind of how I look at my body now. Like, that makes sense at all?
Right.
You know, if somebody gives me a plate of french fries and I have $3 in my pocket, I'm going to eat those french fries.
So, in your travels and in what you've ran and what you've done, what have you learned from living truthfully to yourself?
You know, I think the number one thing I've learned is that there's probably not that we're all kind of connected in some way. And that everybody deserves a chance, no matter who you are or what your situation is. I just think of the society nowadays, with everything that's going on in the world, there's a lot of, you know, even in America, there's a lot of conflict. It's hard for people to get along, and we worry about a lot of things. And I guess the more true I am to myself, the more I realize that those things don't really matter as much. As long as you're doing your best part to contribute to the world, my best part, yeah, it's just as important as anybody else's contribution. So I just try to, yeah, just try to be the best person I can be today. And then yesterday, I might have been a good person, but today I'm trying to be better than that person. And tomorrow, hopefully, you know, just kind of do that cycle every single day until we get to a point where, you know, there's no satisfaction in that, you know, which is a good thing. So for me, just being me and being the best and being humble and that's really all I should try to do.
Right. Well, I think we can always work to better ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody can be better than they were yesterday.
Right.
And by doing that, I think in a little way, making the world a better place.
Right. So I have three motivationals, three little questions that I call them motivationals, and I like to finish the show off with them. And they're short and sweet, but I think they're very important. And so first up is, what's next?
To me? I'm heading to California in a couple weeks to do a Luis Escobar's photo workshop. So I'll be out there hanging out in Oceano. And then hopefully in July I'll be going out to Mongolia to free the girls in the Gobi race. And then from there, time to go to Thailand in September. Probably back to the ranch in October. So I guess this is racing we got going on out there. in Chimera, probably back to hopefully Afghanistan a little bit.
Awesome, man. The going around to different cultures, like, what's the word? I think moving around, that's to all the different places, that's really what interested me with you. So,
yeah.
The second question is, what is, if it's singular, or are, if it's plural, your favorite book or books?
I like a lot of Ohio Thompson's writings. So, Rum Diary is a great book. I know it's an author, not a book, but I really like Hunter Thompson's style of writing and a lot of the stuff he writes about. It seems to be pretty edgy and descriptive. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, author works as well. I always love to hear from my guests what they're reading, what they're loving, because I think it's so important to pick up a book and learn from other perspectives. Just like talking with other people, I think books are just as an important tool to become a well-rounded person. So the final question is to me what I always am curious about. Do you meditate?
I used to quite a bit. I try to do active meditation now, as far as, you know, running days or skateboarding or whatever I'm doing in the moment. And in that way, I'm in the moment and not thinking about what I'm doing at all, which makes me feel, you know, pretty free. And that's all I really look for when I use, you know, these guys to just, you know, sit and meditate. So now, yeah, I just try to find a place where I can clear my mind.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Tyler. Well, I really enjoyed chatting with you today. It wasn't, you know, too crazy long of a conversation. It wasn't too crazy short. I think it was just right. And thanks for coming, making the time and sitting down with me today. And it was over the phone. So, you know, as always, hopefully we made it through any noise or other troubles, but thanks a lot. And that was that, episode 129 of the Touching the Trail podcast with this week's guest, Tyler Tomasello. If you want to find out more about what Tyler is up to, follow him on social media, on Instagram at Ty Tomasello, on Twitter at Tyler Tomasello 1, the number 1, and on Facebook, Tyler Tomasello. You can also go to his website, tylertomasello.com, and all of those links are in the show notes. If you want to find out more about what Touching the Trail is up to, you can follow that on Instagram at Touching the Trail, on Twitter at Touching Trail, and on the Facebook page Touching the Trail. And of course, go to touchingthetrail.com, read the blog, make the recipes, read the reviews, read the meditation page to learn more about meditation, and read the recommended readings, and sign up for some meditation coaching. You can also sign up for the weekly newsletter, Touching the Trail Weekly, sent out every Friday. And you can always contact me via the contact page if you ever have any questions or comments or just want to talk. If you're enjoying the show and want to support the show, then please go to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. If every single one of you out there listening right now donates just $1 every month, I can continue in this show indefinitely, forever, and make it even better. So whatever you can do will be greatly appreciated. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak, functional, affordable, unique, and handmade recovery tools that allow you to dig deep into any muscle and get out there again and again. The base camp is the larger version that you can use against the wall or the floor to really target any one of your trigger points and activate a self-massage that is unlike any other. You can also pick up the Peak, the smaller version, and have a full body recovery tool in a simple form anywhere you go. You can get both for only $18 on targetreleaserecovery.com, and all those links are in the show notes. If you're enjoying the show and you haven't done so already, then please subscribe
And of course, share it with your friends. Spread the word. Build the tribe. Friends, family, coworkers, anybody who you want to better themselves, please share the show out. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to the show. Let me know that you're out there, that you're listening, and that you enjoy what I do every week. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tyler. And I'll leave you with this, as Tyler said. I hope that this week we can all learn to embrace discomfort, to learn from it, to fall in love with it even, and to always remember to go far, go further. Thank you all, and have a great week. The Touching the Trail podcast.